नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत राधा शिवा श्री गौर भक्तिविंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीना श्याम कुंद रार कुंद गिरी गोपदान की श्री वृंदावन मथुर राम की श्री नवदीप माय पुरीराम की श्री जगन्नाथपुरी राम की गंगमयी जमुनमयी की भक्ति देवी तुलसी देवी की श्री गुरु परंपरा की डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति विनांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भगवताम की समवेता भक्त विंद की गौर प्रेम नंदी हरि हरि बोल ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो विष्णुपराय कृष्णप्रष्टाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्ति विदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12. This chapter is entitled Creation of the Kumars and Others. And we are looking at, yes, we are looking at text 34 in today's class. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So let us go through this verse together, line by line, please. Well, this was the verse I was told to give, definitely.
After the six lines first? There was a verse yesterday with six lines. The next line.
Yes,
this is the quick
one.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, the Sanskrit shown on that board has nothing to do with today's verse, so kindly try to follow.
Kadachit jayata svashtur
Veda
asaṁ chaturmukhāt kutum sukshyāmi aham lokān samavetān yathā purā kadachit hari yadi Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaura Hadiva, 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 Gaura Hadiva. Jai Om Vishnupad, Bhadamang, Sabaribhadari Kacharya, Ashapada Sapta Shishimad, Divine Grace to Dhanda Goswami, Obhaya Chandra Vinan Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad, Bhadamang, Sabaribhadari Kacharya, Ashapada Sapta Shishimad, Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Thakur Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki. It's gone, be the founder of Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki Vimsigoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu. Support by His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Purport. As a fire can consume anything and everything without being contaminated, so, by the grace of the Lord, the fire of Brahma's greatness consumed his desire for the sinful act of sex with his daughter. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and they were first revealed to Brahma by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead while Brahma was thinking of recreating the material world. Brahma is powerful by dint of his devotional service unto the Lord, and the Lord is always ready to forgive his devotee if by chance he falls down from the noble path of devotional service. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.42 confirms this as follows. Svapada mulam bhajata priyasya tiktvanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarma yachcho patitam katanchit dhunoti sarvam hridi sanivishta. This means, any person who is engaged 100% in the transcendental loving service of the Lord at his lotus feet is very dear to the personality of Godhead Hari. And the Lord, being situated in the heart of the devotee, excuses all kinds of sins committed by chance. It was never expected that a great personality like Brahma would ever think of sex indulgence with his daughter. The example shown by Brahma only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. Brahma was saved by the mercy of the Lord, with a little punishment. By the grace of the Lord, he did not lose his prestige as the great Brahma. So once more, today's verse reads, Kachit jayata shashur veda asham shmukat kutam shakshyami aham lokan sumavetan yatapura. So let us repeat this translation together, please, after me. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Mukam koroti bhatalam bangam langayate garim yat kripadaram mande sri gurundinatadaram paramananda madhavam.
So I recall one of our God brothers, disciple of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who was a Sanskritist and who traveled with Srila Prabhupada, but he unfortunately, as Prabhupada warned, he took to the scholarly line, and Prabhupada warned another Sanskrit knowing disciple that the more we take to the scholarly line, then the more our devotion will be slackened. So this is what unfortunately happened to this disciple. One might ask, what does it mean to take to the scholarly line? Because now here in Radhadesh, this is becoming a center of education. So perhaps there is some, this warning gives us pause, because so many devotees are coming here to attend classes and study Srila Prabhupada's books and attempt to master this knowledge, so that we can become good preachers. So what is the difference between that and the scholarly line? So you see, the scholars, they're voracious. They have a voracious consuming type of mentality. Anything is subject to their inspection. They think that, in other words, it's an arrogant attitude, that anything and everything within the purview of their minds and senses is subject to their scrutiny, they think. But actually it is not so. We are very insignificant. Our senses and mind are ridden with the four defects. So we cannot presume ourselves to be the unbiased observers of phenomena, objective and all of that. It is not our position. We are conditioned. So to get out of this conditioning, yes, certainly knowledge is necessary. What does Krishna say? For example, in Gita, chapter 4, text 11, Vita ragabhaya krodha manmaya mamupashrita bahavo jnana tapasa puta mabhavamagata. So he says, first of all, he's talking about this same point, conditioning. We're all deeply conditioned, and he mentions three factors. We're all prone to become attached, raga. Isn't that the verses previous to this one? We saw this even in Brahmaji himself. Even in relationship with his own daughter, which is of course highly improper, universally understood to be improper, but this rag, this is the material form of rag, of course, this raga attachment is so strong that even Brahma, who is the direct son of the Lord, born from the lotus that sprouts from the navel of Garbhodakarshe Vishnu, even he falls victim to this raga. And then what follows this strong attachment is bhaya, or fear, because as soon as we become attached, that's accumulative mentality. In the material world, we become attracted to something, then we want to possess it naturally. And then as soon as we're claiming, it begins with this body actually. Begins with the body. We claim possession of this body, and that results in fear, because everything in this material existence is subject to time. And so we cannot keep this body, you see. We can cling to it, try to hold on to it, but time is dragging it with every second. Time is dragging it away from us, and one day it will, we'll lose our grip on this body. It will be gone, and when this body is gone, then everything else. Srila Prabhupada speaks of the extended, you know, extensions of the body in terms of relationships. Our relationships to other persons, near and dear ones, our relationships also to physical objects, which we think are ours, our relationship to this world, which we also, many people, this is a common phrase, my world, they say. But nirmama moha, that's actually nothing is ours, that is an illusion. And time exposes this illusion. So therefore there's fear, because we are so addicted to this illusion. That is the only word that is appropriate. Addicted. We are addicted to this illusion. And so therefore, because we don't want to let it go, there must be fear. Time is snatching everything away from us. There must be fear. And then what follows that? Krodha, frustration. Because one is working so hard to accumulate. At the same time, everything is in danger. By the passage of time, time factor. And so this sets up a conflict, a very, very profound conflict, all-pervading conflict in the psyche of the human being in this material world. And that conflict leads many to a state of total frustration. Just like in my tour of universities that I've been doing in Holland. So a couple nights ago, before the weekend, I had an interesting, it was like a discussion before a room full of philosophy students with a philosophy teacher. He's working on his PhD, he's not yet professor, but he's already teaching at the University of Amsterdam and another college. His name is André van der Braak. And he has a whole, you know, heart-rending... Actually, I must say, I really felt sympathy for this person. Because his story is a sad one. He went to the University of Amsterdam years ago and majored in philosophy. And after that, after he graduated, he decided to take up spiritual life. Unfortunately, he was attracted to the Mayavadi doctrine. So first he became a Buddhist for 5 years. And after that, for 11 years, he was following one American guru, American Advaitist. We can't really say a genuine Advaita Vedantist, but, you know, just one of these all-is-one type New Age gurus who belongs to no sampradaya. And so this man was chasing the void, André van der Braak, chasing the void for 16 years. And, you know, nothing more frustrating than chasing the big zero in the sky. So he became disappointed and he returned to his philosophy, particularly the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche, who proclaimed about 100 years ago or so, God is dead. He was the first. That's become quite, you know, common thing to hear, but Nietzsche was the revolutionary first to proclaim this, God is dead. So Nietzsche, even you could hear in van der Braak's defense, his defense and glorification of Nietzsche, you could hear it's all about this philosophy. Is all about tragedy. It's Nietzsche's view of the world is that that the world is chaos, that there actually is no order in the world, and anything can happen, and one just has to be strong. This is that Nietzschean idea of the Übermensch, which of course was misused by Hitler later on. Nietzsche's idea of Übermensch or Superman or whatever is just a person who is ready to weather whatever material nature is going to throw at him. he's going to, you know, just go through it. Keep Vorwärtsmarsch, like a good German. Until, of course, the ticker stops and he falls over dead. End of story. But, you know, you just keep going forward. And don't give up. Be brave, be strong, etc., etc. Which is rather pointless. If everything is chaos anyway. There's no meaning to life. So, this Van der Brock was, his depiction of life is that life is tragic. He used this word several times. Life is a tragedy, Hare Krishna. Not a mystery. He said, the religious-minded people, especially because he had some background in Eastern religion, they're inclined to view the world as a mystery, as something, you know, to be probed into further until we find the answer. But there is no answer. So he was an unhappy man. He was speaking with a stutter. You see, and I really felt sorry for him. So he left himself wide over for a big smashing, you see. And in the good old days, myself included, you know, it was, preaching was considered especially, it was important to smash the opponent, but I didn't feel like that. I have to admit, I haven't felt like that for many years, just to smash someone. I feel now it's more important. Of course, we have to, we can't be silent about the faults, the misleading nature of what he is, such a person is presenting. And that has to be exposed. But there is a way which Srila Prabhupada himself endorsed. Actually, one of Prabhupada's disciples, in discussing, this is in the philosophy book, so Srila Prabhupada was discussing with one disciple about Socrates, and the Socratic method was brought up, and it's called maieutic in Greek, which means to be like a midwife. So midwife is there to kind of just help the natural process of the birth giving. So in the same way, maieutic method means, in terms of philosophy, especially you can, rather than bringing up the big hammer and you know, because that would have definitely alienated most of these students, because they were philosophy students. They were also inclined to skepticism and existentialism and all these modern vogue ways of thinking. And they were, I could tell also, you know, you could tell seeing me in this dress, so they were just waiting for me to entertain them with some religious fanaticism, you know, to get all excited. You nonsense, you. So I knew, I'm not going to fall into that trap. So, although he's, you know, he left himself so wide open, it was like an invitation, you know, like he held up a target, you know. So I just asked him questions. I just thought, use this maieutic method, which is asking, you ask him questions. And one of the questions I asked him is that, my dear Mr. Van der Brock, if we are, if everything is chaos, as you say, but here we are, this seems to be a, you know, a room which has form, the University of Amsterdam, which is a specific place, and these are students here, and we're having a discussion of philosophy. You know, language is also order, it's not chaos. So what is your opinion about this? Is this experience we're having real, or is it unreal? Are we really here in the University of Amsterdam discussing philosophy with these students? Or is this all just some kind of illusion? And he looked at me and he said, you know, I don't know. So you know, then it's, you know, buyer beware. I mean, if you accept such a person as a philosopher, you're going to listen to him. And he's not even sure if he's in the same room with you or not. I mean, it's pretty obvious that you're taking quite a risk to take what he says seriously. So like that, my original point is that this krodha, this frustration, it is very widespread today, and it is, even being presented in this way, in the form of philosophy. Nietzsche was a totally frustrated person who became crazy, actually. I didn't bring this up. That was another thing, because that's called ad hominem attack, you know, so you're not supposed to do that. But I could have done that. Nietzsche's your acharya, so could you please tell the audience what became of him in the last 10 years of his life? He went totally mad. He had written all these books, but in the last 10 years of his life, he couldn't even speak. He couldn't even formulate a sentence because he was insane. So then this is krodha. Krodha means anger, but also extreme anger means madness in the other sense, craziness. One becomes so frustrated that one cannot deal at all with anything and just becomes mad. So anyway, Sri Krishna is declaring that these are three conditionings which are very, very deep. And we have to overcome them. Vita ragavaya krodha. And how do we overcome them? Manmaya. Mamuparshita. That you become my devotee, you worship me. Think of me and worship me. And in this way, bhavo, many, many persons, Krishna says it is not a rare isolated thing, but there have been many, many persons in the past, jnana tapasa, by knowledge and by also austerity in devotional service, putta, they became purified, madbhavam agata, and they attained my nature, that means my transcendental nature. They transcended this material world, went back home, back to Godhead. So, jnana, yes, knowledge. Knowledge is necessary in devotional service. But this scholarly line means it is actually... ignorance posing as knowledge, because voracious mind just consuming everything, all kinds of facts, just to make a name for oneself as a big philosopher, big scholar, knowing more than everyone else. This is another kind of ahamkara, false ego. And ahamkara is the very principle of tamoguna, ignorance. So therefore the line, there is a line of knowledge. Now just like Srila Prabhupada, when Maharaj was offering the Premadvani prayers at the end of his wonderful kirtan, he said, Samstaka Acharya, Founder Acharya. So the Founder Acharya, this is his position. We have Guru Shastra Sadhu. So there are so many gurus, and they have said, given so many instructions for centuries and centuries and centuries. They have written so many commentaries, and there are so many shastras, and so many sadhus are there. So much knowledge is there. But like Mahabharata warns, apparently, all this knowledge is vibhinna. It can seem to be contradictory. So therefore, Founder Acharya, he sets the focus. He sets the emphasis. He draws the line. What evidence we may accept and what we should leave alone. Just like among Shastras. In our Goswami Granth, the collection of all the books of the Goswamis, There are books which are actually forbidden for us to read. Someone can say, no, but Rupa Goswami wrote it. But no. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, founder of Charya Viscon. Like Srila Prabhupada said, even about his own books, about his own books, he said it is like pharmacy, like drugstore. So many medicines are there in the pages of Srila Prabhupada's books, but one must have prescription also. One must have doctor who says, take this, and then take this, and then take this. So even there are some portions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita which Srila Prabhupada has given to us, but there are some portions which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he discouraged his own disciples to read. He put stress, emphasis on, just like Srila Prabhupada prepared the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So there are five discussions that comprise the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And one of them is the discussion of Lord Chaitanya with Sri Ramananda Roy. Today is his disappearance day. And then there's the discussion with Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. Like this, there are five. So this is what is given stress. So this is the province, this is the authority of the founder Acharya. But to draw the line, to like physician, to give us out of all of that possible guru, shastra, sadhu sources, to give us what we need, to what? Vitaraga vaya krodha, man mayama mopashita, bhava ugyana tapasa, puttamad bhava magata, to fulfill Lord Krishna's very instruction, that you have to overcome your attachment, your fear, your anger. Become my devotee, worship me. Be purified by knowledge and austerity. And come back home, back to Godhead. Like this rag, you see, there's a, you know, the word has two applications. One in the material sense, one spiritual sense. Raganuga bhakti, ragatmika bhakti. Ragamark, these terms apply to transcendental attachment to Krishna. Be careful. One can confuse the two, and this is the mistake of the Prakriti Sahajas. They cannot find the difference between the mundane rag and the spiritual rag. And they become bewildered and they fall down. So this is why the line drawn by the Acharya is absolutely necessary. So this is the difference. This is, getting back, my original point was a scholar. The scholars respect no such lines of definition drawn by Acharyas. They think everything is open to my inspection, everything is open to my inquiry. They do not take into consideration their own qualification and disqualification. They think I've got an IQ of whatever, 153. That's my qualification. I did very well on my SAT test, and I've got this degree and that degree, and blah 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 blah. So string of letters after my name. That's my qualification. So I can put my nose in anything. You see, anywhere and everywhere is open to my inspection. I remember when I was in the BBT library party, I met a gentleman, and I'm using this word advisedly, but we like to be polite, so I will call him a gentleman, but he was not. And he had translated in some American university, I forget which one, but he had translated Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I was amazed. Here's some American scholar. So I, because our way of going about distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books at libraries was first you investigate. You go into the library, you check out what books they have already, you find out what professors are in the area, Indology, Sanskrit, religious studies like that, philosophy. And you find out their names and where their offices are, where they're located, and so on and so forth. You try to call them and make appointment. So I found out about this man in this way. He's translator of Chaitanya Charitamrita. I was amazed. So I went to see him, and I was totally disappointed. You see, this was back in the, still in the early 70s, so there was this, you know, sort of hangover from the hippie era, especially among the intellectuals in the universities. So he had a big, you know, florid mustache and a flowered shirt and a kind of Beatles haircut. And he had a cigarette hanging out of the corner of his mouth, and he was, you know, real laid back and relaxed. Yeah, I translated Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's right. So, big disappointment. What could he understand? So this is scholar, you see, not qualified. And for these scholars, you see, their reasoning, I mean their motivation, better word, motivation for getting into whatever area of scholarship they get into is ultimately the same reason that an auto mechanic learns how to fix automobiles. You know, he's got to put food on the table. In fact, I mean, I hate to say this, but in one university, that's what one of these academicians told me. He was just leaving his office. I caught him as he was leaving his office. And he was kind of, you know, oh, you're a bookseller. You know, that's how we presented ourselves. We were all dressed up in nice suits and wigs. And we didn't look like devotees. Oh, so you're a bookseller, yeah, and I'm a professor, he said. Yeah, we're both trying to put the pork chops on the table, he said. Both trying to put... I won't say it again. But anyway, that's the point, you see? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's what it comes down to. So whatever field of knowledge they take up, that's the ultimate aim of it. To maintain this body. So it doesn't really matter to them whether they're studying Sanskrit scriptures or studying worms or studying anything. You see, the object is the same. And so this is mundane point of view. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada said, if we take that scholarly line, this voracious, all-consuming, all-devouring, respect no lines drawn by any authority, just go anywhere and everything, everywhere, and simply, ultimately, for name, fame, prestige, and maintaining the body, and then there's no hope, you see. Even if we come to this very subject matter, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll not have any understanding. It'll simply be perversion. So the point here is, of this verse, is that Lord Brahma, he is our acharya. This was what I was saying. I was starting to tell you a story about a disciple who eventually took to that scholarly line, and while he was underway, already forming that type of attitude, he came to Srila Prabhupada and asked about this very point that's being discussed in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That how can Brahma be the head of our sampradaya if he did such a thing, as described in the previous verses? That after creating a daughter, most beautiful daughter, I believe she was the goddess of dawn, and then he became attracted to her. So how can he be, if he did such a thing, the head of our sampradaya? How can our sampradaya be called the Brahma sampradaya, if Brahma is doing such things? And Prabhupada's reply was very short and stern. He said, whatever he may be, he is acharya. You see, it's in the pages of Bhagavatam. It's in the pages of Bhagavatam for us to learn. And Prabhupada gives here very nicely the lesson. He explains the lesson. The example shown by Brahma, which we find in this book, Srimad Bhagavatam, only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. But Brahma was saved by the mercy of the Lord with a little punishment. And by the grace of the Lord, he did not lose his prestige as the great Brahma. This is why he's Acharya. Because again and again, Krishna comes to save him. This is a very interesting point. I find it remarkable that in this, you know, it's not a chance, nothing's by chance, but this short visit here to Radhadesh, then I'm to give class on this verse because I've been doing a study of the psychology, so to speak, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Psychology that has become a quite discussed subject even within ISKCON. It's quite popular everywhere and also within ISKCON now. And I've noticed that devotees, when they take up this subject, get interested in psychology for themselves or to help others, they refer to many books, different books about psychology. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily wrong in itself, but what fascinates me is that this Srimad Bhagavatam is full of psychology. It gives a whole elaborate and exact design of the mind, a breakdown of the mind. In fact, right in this very section, Lord Kapiladev's instructions to Devahuti, there is so much elaborate information of the subtle construction of the mind, how the mind works. And all throughout the Bhagavatam, this is being expounded upon. So there is a complete psychological system in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so that has been, for the last several months, the subject matter of my own study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to try to bring this out. And so this point of Brahma and his sometimes falling into illusion, it has come up in my study, because there is in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's, from the psychological point of view, there's a very, very interesting discussion which is told. It's a discussion between the four Kumaras, Lord Brahma, and the Hamsa avatar. But this is told by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. It's part of the Uddhava Gita, speaking of the Hamsa avatar as his own appearance, his own avatar. In ancient times, this occurred, this discussion between the Kumaras and Brahma occurred soon after the creation. So from the psychological point of view, it's very interesting, because the Kumaras, their question to their father, Brahma, is about the relationship between the mind and the sense objects, which is really the essence of what psychology is all about. You see, our mind becomes entangled in the tanmatras. That's the technical term for what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we touch. All of this gets filed away into the memory. And that memory goes back, not just, you know, it's not just this lifetime's memory. But Srila Prabhupada explains the mind is a spool, now more and more digital cameras are coming in, but the old-fashioned cameras have a spool of film. So Prabhupada compared the mind to such a spool, and life after life, click, 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 and the images are being retained. And they're coming up. Srila Prabhupada gives this interesting... And Prabhupada uses the word subconscious. He uses the word repeatedly, subconscious. So he gives this nice example of a lake or a pond, and from the bottom of the pond there rises up a bubble which bloop on the surface suddenly. From somewhere underneath you suddenly see bubbles appearing. And so Srila Prabhupada said this means that there are dirty things. In other words, fermentation on the bottom of the pond, and this is creating these bubbles which are seen on the surface. So we have our surface mind, you see, this conscious mind which we're using to interact with this world around us. And if that's all there was to psychology, actually spiritual life would be very simple. You see, you just create a nice pure environment like we have here, Radha Desh, nice deities, nice devotees, everything nice, sattvic, give everyone activities, and then they should just very quickly, very, very quickly just become pure devotees. Go back home, back to Godhead. But, that's not exactly our experience, is it? We find for ourselves, we have troubles. And we see other devotees have troubles, and there have been so many famous cases, even at the very top echelon of our society. Suddenly, some hidden contamination bursts forth and completely disrupts the spiritual life of a devotee. And we, you know, we're all struggling with that, if we're honest. We all have that problem. So Srila Prabhupada explains this in using psychological language. Prabhupada says there is a subconscious. In his translation to a verse in the seventh canto, where Sri Prahlad Maharaj is using the word manaha, the mind, Srila Prabhupada puts an asterisk in the word for word, and then there's a footnote. And he talks about the mind's stubborn attachment to this material world, that the mind's whole purpose is to keep us in this material world. The mind is a reservoir of all desires, memories extending back for many, many lifetimes. And therefore the mind is the most important, the most significant part of the subtle body. The subtle body is composed of buddhi and ahamkara as well as manas. But of the three, the mind is the most important because the mind is the storehouse of our desires. And that storehouse is in the subconscious. And so, you know, we have been how long in this material world? Srila Prabhupada says, since time immemorial. And that's that spool is gigantic. a gigantic spool of hidden memories, and they keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. So many, you know, strange phenomena are there. Like people have this thing called deja vu, where a person has suddenly, he feels, I've been here before. It's so familiar. Yes, and he may very well have been in that place before in a previous lifetime. Or in a place very much like it, and this is resonating with memories inside, you see, deep inside. He doesn't know how. He doesn't have a finger on it. He can't figure it out. It's just a conviction that I've been here before. I know this place. It's so familiar. These memories, hidden away in the subconscious. So they're always there. They come out in dreams at night, but they're even acting in our conscious state. And sometimes we become seized from within by very powerful desires that disrupt our spiritual life. So anyway, to get back, I have this bad habit of making these long digressions. Sometimes I lose the point, but today, by Krishna's grace, let's come back to the point. And the point is the four Kumaras are asking their father about this very problem. Guneshu avishate cheto, that the sense objects pervade the mind. When you think about it, how could we know, how could we define the mind if it didn't have sense impressions in it? Because the mind's business is sankalpa vikalpa, that's the function of the mind, accepting and rejecting. So if you tried to imagine a mind that had no sense impressions, that had never experienced sight or sound or touch, then would it be a mind? It would not be. And this is the point the Kumaras are bringing up. That the mind is defined by sensory impressions. And similarly, gunas chetasi cha prabhu, O dear prabhu, O master, Lord, our father, Lord Brahma, our guru. The mind also defines the sense objects. It's a fact. You know, just like I gave this example the other day in Antwerp. It just came to me. I'll repeat it. Just like here I am. I'm sitting in front of this wooden table. Now for me, this wooden table or this thing here, also made of wood, you know, I'm not very, you know, this is not really attracting my attention. I mean, the cup is on it, the book is on it, but wooden table, I mean, it's just a piece of furniture to us human beings. But if I had the mind of a termite, this would be lunch. This would be very, very important. You see, but I don't have that kind of mind. So therefore, you know, take it or leave it. It's just a piece of furniture, an object in the room. So you see, mind defines the sense objects. What we're attracted to out of all the possible things. And you know, there's so much information coming in through these senses. In fact, our mind and our buddhi are filtering so much, which for us is just not important. But for other living entities, other kinds of brains and minds, very important. You see. So this is a very deep philosophical and psychological question that the Kumaras present to their father, Brahma. Because they're saying, we are meant to be, mumukshubi means desirous of liberation. Isn't this the human form of life? Isn't this the distinction of the human form from all other forms? That the human being can achieve liberation. A cat and a dog, Prabhupada said, we do not see dogs coming to the Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class. They have no interest. This is another example. They do not see any importance on their mental level of such discussions as we're having now. They see absolutely no importance. You see? So, yes, you see? The shape of the mind is shaping also how we see this world, how we view the sense objects. And similarly, the mind is pervaded by sense objects. So if one is desirous of liberation, as the four Kumaras, they're famous for that. They're incarnations of the Lord's Jnana Shakti. They're the original Jnanis. And so Jnanis are famously concerned with liberation. So they're presenting themselves to their father. We are mumukshubi, we are desirous of liberation. But we cannot figure out how it will be possible to ever detach the mind from the sense objects. That is required to become liberated. But how can it be done when this mind it's inseparable? It's defined by the sense objects. And Brahma heard this question, and he thought about it, and he thought about it, and he thought about it, and he thought about it. And Lord Krishna tells Uddhava, because Brahma himself was affected by his own creation, he could not come up with an answer. Heard just in these verses before, how Brahma can become affected by his own creation, so that he even pursues his daughter. And so this is another instance. This is one instance, and this is another instance in the 11th canto. Krishna says in Gita, prakriti kriyamanani, guna karmani, You see, it is actually Prakriti which is doing. And if we think I am doing ahamkara vibhudhatma, then we are bewildered. Kartaham, thinking I am the doer. Iti manyate. This is bewildered mentality. So even Brahmaji sometimes slips into that bewilderment. And therefore, what follows? Purusha prakriti stohi. You see, when the Purusha, the soul, is thinking I'm enjoyer and is situated in material nature in that mentality, bhunkte prakriti jagunam. Then he wants to enjoy the modes of nature. Karanam gunasangasya. He gets carried away by these modes. Sodasod joni janmashu. To auspicious and inauspicious destinations. You see, what happened to Brahma, as described in the previous verses, is pursuing his own daughter. That is inauspicious, asad. His own sons were saying that. This is not auspicious. This is what happens when we let ourselves get caught up by material nature. So, again we find in the 11th canto, Brahma, because of being affected by his creation, kartaham iti manyate, he could not find an answer. But what happened? What happened is the Hamsa avatar appeared. And it's, there's a very beautiful explanation why the Lord came as swan in this particular lila of his. Because Brahmaji, who is the representative of the Lord, the Adikavi, the original teacher of the Vedas, Brahma's consciousness had become mixed with matter. So Brahma is he's the most exalted jiva. He is suitable, he is just suited to receive Vedic knowledge. But sometimes his mind becomes a little contaminated. So what is the special ability of a swan? Who can say? Yes, he can. When there's a mixture of milk and water, and what does that stand for? A mixture of matter and spirit. So the Hamsa, Paramahamsa, he has the ability to drink from that mixture only the milk and leave the water. So this is why the Lord appeared as Hamsa avatar. To separate Brahma's pure original consciousness from the modes of nature. And Hamsa avatar's answer is very wonderful. He tells the Kumaras that yes, he doesn't quibble with them, he doesn't argue with them about their analysis of this irrevocable connection of mind and senses. He says yes. That is the nature of the mind and the senses, to become enmeshed like that. But the soul is different. This is the point he makes. He says, the jiva, in spite of this deha ubayam, this accepting of this designation of the body, which means guna and chitta, which means the senses and their objects, the gross body in other words, and also the mind. So he's talking about both gross and subtle body as deha. In spite of the jiva having accepted this designation, the jiva is non-different, is of the same nature, the same quality as madatmana. He says, my own self. And actually everything that you're perceiving, actually, the Hamsa avatar, his reply is very much like the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. Aham evasam agri. The language is very similar. He says, everything that you're perceiving with your senses is only me anyway. But then when we talk of everything being Krishna, yes, but then Krishna has two levels of energy, which he explains in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He speaks of prakriti vidhi me param, my own prakriti, which is transcendental, my own nature, This is what he means when he says, Putta madbhavam agata, to attain my nature after becoming purified. My spiritual nature, which is para, transcendental. And of course, then there's the bina prakriti. Both are Krishna's nature, but bina means separated. So one nature is removed, and that is the eightfold material elements. So Krishna says, this is all me. You're not seeing anything else but me. But still you're becoming bewildered because you're identifying with the lower nature. You belong to my own nature. So this struggle to separate, to drag the mind away from the sense objects is futile. And this is the reason why so many neophytes on the spiritual path fall down. Because in the course of that struggle, you know, like I remember hearing, I used to travel, I traveled for 2 years with His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj, very great soul, and I learned many, many things from him. And one thing he used to tell me was that he told about a bhakta in early days in Los Angeles, new devotee, who decided to, as it were, become Krishna conscious by storm. <You know? laughs> So he had heard that we should always remember Krishna, never forget him, see Krishna everywhere. So he was always wearing one of these, what are called harmonica holders, you know, like Bob Dylan used to have, you know. But instead of a harmonica, he had a picture of Krishna. So, you know, wherever he was, washing pots, there was always this picture of Krishna in front of his face. And I guess when he wanted to see where he was going while walking, he had to look around the picture a little bit. And Vishnu Jana Maharaj said, this poor fellow didn't make it. He didn't last very long. You see, so the human being, the human nature, getting back to psychology, according to the Bhagavatam, is Raja Svabhava, is of the nature of the mode of passion. And you know what the mode of passion is all about, this intense endeavor to achieve goals, you know, to by one's own power. And our problem is that we bring this mode of passion into spiritual life, into Krishna consciousness. And so we think, you know, it's up to us to, you know, pull apart the mind and the sense objects. But in doing this, what are we thinking? We are thinking, I'm the mind. This is the mistake. We're not the mind. If you think you're the mind, then you're also thinking you're the body. Because Prabhupada gives that wonderful example, the mind is just, as subtle body, is just the underclothes. Now nobody walks around in their underclothes. See, so, yes, you wear your underclothes, but over them you put your over. So as soon as you have underclothes, you have to have overclothes. You see, so as soon as you're accepting the mind as a self, then you accept the body as a self. Inseparable. That's the point. So, you know, we involve ourselves in all these passionate endeavors, you know. I'm going to fast. I'm going to, you know, this and that. And, hoping to conquer our lower nature. But we cannot conquer our lower nature. It's not our position to be conquerors. Krishna is Rishikesh. Krishna is the controller of the sense. What we have to do is surrender to him. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, and he said this to one of our former leaders of ISKCON, top leaders, who has departed this movement in the last some years. But he told him in December 1975 in Vrindavan, he said, Krishna says, Sarva Dhamma Pritya Mamikam Sharanam Braja. You surrender to me. You give up your own idea of Dharma and you surrender to me. This is what Krishna tells us. Just surrender. And Prabhupada said, he said to this very devotee, he said, and if you think you can do it, then again you're a rascal. You see? So, of course, man proposes, God disposes, and, you know, surrender to Krishna doesn't mean, as Prabhupada said in one lecture, that Krishna didn't tell Arjuna, yes, you sit down and smoke marijuana, and I'll take care of the battle.